And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, indeed. A Friday morning here on the John Gambling Show, and time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. The beginning of a three-day weekend for a lot of people, but remember, people still have to work some.
Some of them, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. City's got to, you know, government has to function, keep us safe and clean. And it's a good time to remember, don't go in the water unless there are lifeguards, and don't drink and drive. Those are the two things that always lead to some tragedies on these holiday weekends.
Speaking of holiday weekends and frolicking in the water, the floating pools, which were an experiment, seemed to have worked out extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, it's so good. We said when we built it, we're going to move it around, and it was so good the people where it was don't want it moved, but we will move it. And, you know, it says this is a good idea. Maybe we can afford to do some others.
Yeah,
I mean, because it really is a good idea.
All right. This week, tragedy, of course, the Deutsche Bank, two firefighters losing their life, and now the controversy of a tainted building, damaged building, dangerous building.
Well, it was always a dangerous building from the date of 9/11. And if you remember, there has been for the last 5 or 6 years a focus on making sure that the public, the air the public breathes is safe. And the EPA has set some very reasonable, strict, but reasonable rules. In their judgment, this is what's required to keep the public safe. I'm not an expert. They are the experts. And you know what would happen to them if they relaxed their rules. There'd be all sorts of criticism. And you remember Christy Whitman going through all of that craziness when there was a lot of pressure back then to, let's get on with it. We're going to show the terrorists that we aren't beaten, and I don't remember anybody, in all fairness, saying let's slow down, but the EPA has put in a set of rules. We were following those rules. A tragedy took place. I can't quite explain why the inspections the fire department was supposed to make of the standpipe in the building weren't done, and we're investigating that, and we've removed the people directly responsible for the moment, and see what happens after the investigation's completed. But that's an appropriate thing for the fire commissioner to do. And then LMDC and everybody else is going to look at their people and see who, acted appropriately, didn't act appropriately. But I think if you take a look at the process, the building was coming down slowly and safely, the fire tragedy notwithstanding. What I can't quite explain is on the demolition floors when some of the senior fire officers who went through during our search for remains didn't say something about it. But we believe that we
can... You
mean
about the standpipes not working, things like that?
Well, they wouldn't have checked the standpipe because unless you went in the basement, you wouldn't know. That was the fire department next door, the engine company next door's job. But they saw that stairways were sealed. And we think there's a ways to give the containment that the EPA is insisting on, and I think rightly so. Last thing we want to do is try to pressure the EPA to relax their standards, and then at the same time to make it safe for our fire department. And we'll work with the fire department and with the EPA and with the State Department of Labor, which has a say here, and the Buildings Department and the LMDC to find a ways to continue the process. The building is coming down by taking everything, cutting it up into small pieces, sealing it up, and removing it. What we've done during the last few days is we have finally shored up all of the netting and the scaffolding around the building so that the few streets that have been closed since the terrible fire will now be open probably by tomorrow, certainly over the weekend. OEM has done a great job of coordinating this work, and the repaired standpipe will be tested by the FDNY today and continue all the environmental tests, continue to come back safe. So that's good news. We all want the building down, and we'd like to have it down quickly, but deconstruction has to be safe for workers and first responders and environmentally safe, and that's why the EPA has been involved since the beginning. The fire department issues with the building are about making sure the first responders can quickly and safely respond to an emergency that in the building that is being taken down, and these agencies have been working together, and Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler is sending a set of fire safety and general site requirements to the LMDC today, which will have to be instituted before deconstruction and decontamination get back underway. And these requirements really aren't about the standards that the EPA has set for cleaning the building as it comes down, and they don't conflict with those requirements.
But these are city requirements now coming
out
of your
requirements.
Office.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what makes all of this complex is you have the federal government, the state government, and the city government, and then at each level you may have different agencies involved, which it's, you know, in government, particularly when these agencies are big, getting them to work together is a management challenge. It isn't a company. It isn't a government. And just, you know, there's a reason why this has taken so long. I mean, everybody says, get it down, and they blamed Pataki, and they blame everybody, get it down. Oh, but I want to do it safely. Well, you can't have it. It took the EPA, I believe, about a year to approve a plan for us to go ahead. It took a couple years for the private dispute that took place between the owner of the building and the insurance companies. And we've been working on it for a year. I mean, there's no simple answers to complex problems, and getting government agencies at different levels to work together is a challenge, but it's doable. And I think we were doing it. Unfortunately, what didn't happen was we didn't have procedures in place to make sure the fire department had access, and we didn't do the inspections that were necessary to make sure there was a standpipe that worked and there was access through stairways. You can seal them, but with a door that you can walk through or something you can break through very easily. You have to be able to get through them, but it can contain the air. And you want to have things like turning off the negative air, which keeps the air
right
from going outside.
The sealed stairways, were they part of the order, the EPA order, to seal the building up?
I don't know what the technical details, but, you know, they said you got to seal the area.
Yeah, because if they said that again,
you got a big hole from one floor
yesterday
to another. I think their idea of seal is to keep air and debris from going through that hole. Our idea of seal that's acceptable to the fire department is that's okay as long as we can
get through it.
And, you know, you can have a door in your house, but the fire department has to be able to open the door or go through it with an axe or something.
Was the complexity of the government maze that you just described part of the reason that the tragedy might have happened, or is that going a little far?
I think that's probably going a little far. You know, the district attorney is of Manhattan, Robert Morgenthau, is doing an investigation of the contractor and the subcontractor and LMDC and how the contracts were let. My recollection is Bovis was the only one willing to do the job. So it's easy to say, oh, well, I didn't like that company. But keep in mind, Bovis is also a big construction company that does a lot of work in the city and around the world and has a pretty good reputation, great reputation, I think. But we have to work with the LMDC and Governor Spitzer and the EPA and all the regulatory authorities to bring the building down as safely as possible and as soon as possible. And that does not mean us trying to pressure the EPA to relax their standards. I do not want to explain to the public why we should reduce the safety standards for the people in the city. And I'm not enough of an expert to say that their standards are too tough or too weak. They're the experts. And if they have to make an error, I would rather have them err on the side of protecting us.
Who owns the building? LMDC?
LMDC owns the building, and we got LMDC to buy the building when the insurance company and the owner, after 2 years of negotiation and fighting, couldn't get together. And that was the only that then progress did start.
And so the LMDC owns the property it sits on as well?
I'm not sure. There could be a 99-year lease from somebody else.
Somebody else.
I just don't know.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We're going to take a break right here. We'll be back. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, our Friday get-together. Nice to have you back here after a couple of weeks off.
I was willing to come.
At least for me.
Right, yeah, thank you.
Not for you.
I had one weekend, sadly, I had a funeral for a firefighter, and the other weekend I had something else. I didn't get the break that you had promised me.
There's not a lot of vacation in your line of work.
Another 867 or whatever number of days it is, 57,
right?
Then I'll be on a permanent vacation.
All right. Reaction from fire department, police department here in New York City to the weapons of mass destruction that were found in our backyard on First Avenue, Phosgene gas.
It's a cute story. They finally found WMDs, and it was in New York City. I gather this was something brought back by an inspector from Iraq.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, but I mean, what it says is at least 10 years ago, there were WMDs in Iraq, which everybody seems to miss that story. No. Now, whether they're all destroyed or not, I have no idea. I'm not an expert on this, but the guy brought it back from Iraq.
Yeah, so if there was there in 97, it was probably there in 2000.
Who knows?
Right?
We never found him. And, you know, that search has long since been lost in the blame game. And what do you do? Nobody focuses on what do you do next. But it was discovered by the United Nations, to their credit, which in some senses surprises me because they tend to be so isolated and insular. They called us right away and invited us in and let the FBI and the PD and the fire department handle it. And it was taken out of town safely. And I have nothing but good things to say about the United Nations. You know, there, in some sense, the United Nations is an independent country and they protect their, rightly so, I suspect. You know, an embassy would do the same thing. But this time, I have nothing but good things to say about them, and I appreciate the cooperation. They did the right thing. They did what I keep telling everybody. When you see a problem, call the professionals and let them handle it.
They didn't call 311.
They would call 911 in this case, I suspect, but they did not.
How about the fact that it got through the airports? Again, this is not necessarily a city issue, though it is. It was transported through New York City.
10 years ago, I don't know what the procedures were, but my understanding has always been, maybe it's still true, it probably is, that diplomatic pouches don't get
checked. Yeah.
You know, you can't have it both ways. Our country wants to bring things into other countries, then you can't have the protect. You can't keep them from bringing things in here.
MTA fare hike. You said earlier in the week that you can't have it. You can't have it every which way to Sunday. Something's got to give.
We have to, if we're going to have an economy down the road and clean air for our children to breathe, we have to get more people using mass transit. And the ways you do that is three things. You make it harder to or more expensive to drive your car. You reduce congestion so trucks can deliver faster and don't get stuck in traffic idling because you have to still have truck deliveries or you don't have an economy. You want to keep the cost of mass transit as low as you can, and you want to have mass transit as fast and pleasurable and as extensive as you can. And congestion pricing, which I know why, when you do a poll, do you want to pay more? You always get no.
Of course.
Do you want to pay more if you get something for it? Then the poll actually just almost totally switches. Oh, yes, for that I would do it. You have to have the congestion pricing idea is it does penalize people for driving their cars. That would reduce the cars and would help with the truck traffic because fewer cars on the road means the trucks can go through quicker and don't pollute the air. It gives you money to expand mass transit, make it more pleasurable, and we have to do that. Paying for mass transit itself, you know there's going to be pressures on the MTA budget. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see this coming. The people who work for the MTA want to have better lives, and they want to get paid more, and they certainly would argue for cost of living adjustments, and they probably argue for more. They always do, and sometimes they deserve it, and sometimes they don't, but sometimes they get it, and sometimes they don't. Cost of fuel goes up. We all want more security on the subway systems to protect and detect and all that sort of thing. That costs money. Real estate transaction taxes that gave us this, quote, unexpected bubble. Remember, the heads of the MTA were criticized as being buffoons for not knowing that the surplus was coming in.
$1 billion.
The state didn't know it, the city didn't know it, and they didn't know it. Nobody expected this big boom in mega real estate transactions. 1% of the real estate transactions the city generated 50% of the real estate transaction fees.
It was
all because of, you know, a relatively small number of big buildings turning over. That, because of the turmoil in the credit markets and because of the level of prices that have been raised, very unlikely to occur again. And the city budget, you know, is going to get hurt. Our tax revenues, not only from that, but from Wall Street's profits. Wall Street profits estimates are now down 50% from what they were last year. That's a lot of tax revenue. So, you know, well, the state's going to have the same problem. So the state and the city aren't going to have the ability to subsidize that they would have had otherwise. The MTA is going to have less revenue because they get a percentage of the transaction fees. And at the same time, expenses are going up. Something's got to give. And what can give is either reduce service, which is unconscionable. You shouldn't do that. In fact, you have to expand it, for what I talked about before. Then you have either the taxpayers subsidizing this, or the strap hangers, or a combination. And I don't run the MTA. I don't know how much they need, when they need it. I will say that, you know, the MTA was created to get politics out of mass transit, because everybody said, oh, I don't want to be responsible for raising prices and bad service. So they create this independent agency. Well, it turns out that independence is the last word you should use. It's a state agency. Right. It's very political. Who gets appointed, and then they hold the governor and the mayor responsible. The mayor has some appointees on it. Four people who the guy was running against, I think, called potted plants. They're not potted plants. They're four of the smartest people you and I will ever get a chance to work with, and they try, but they don't exactly run it. The management of it runs it. All the bureaucracies run these things, and the head of the MTA. And the guy they've got running it now, Lee Sanders, is actually a pretty good guy. I've been impressed with him. I knew him casually before, but he's got the right senses, but he's going to have a tough time, and we have to somehow or other stop the politics of having the elected officials get involved. You got to run it like an agency that is a requirement. The legislature should define a level of service, and then they've got to be responsible how to do it.
Are you concerned, before we go to the break here in the half hour, are you concerned about the foreclosure issues that is not only national but international affecting New York?
It can't help. I mean, there are people who have subprime loans and variable rate mortgages so that when they get reset, they're going to get very badly hurt. There's news this morning. The president's giving a speech at 11 about going to see if he can bail out people. Now, keep in mind,
he's not using the word bailout. He's very careful. I agree with you. It's a bailout.
What happened here is a bunch of people who didn't really have the wherewithal to get mortgages got mortgages. Now, if they didn't have access to those mortgages, the elected officials would scream, "You're discriminating against them." Some of them lied about their incomes. Some by a lot. Now they say, "Oh, well, the salesman convinced them to do it." Okay, but we live in a world where you put your signature down, you're supposed to know what you're signing, and you have to take responsibility. Because every time there's a victim, we've got to find somebody that's responsible for it. So what happened is a bunch of people got mortgages that they really couldn't afford. And then all of a sudden, one day, interest rates ticked up a bit and this started cascading down. And everybody said, oh, my goodness, look at all these people who can't repay. We want the construction industry to boom. It's great American dream. Homeowner helps the neighborhoods. We're big fans of that. The whole country and certainly New York City's government as well. But on the other hand, if that market collapses, it cascades through the through the economy and will hurt New York as well. We're not immune to this. Everybody thinks we are. We will get hurt less, I think, than the rest of the country. But make no mistake about it, it's not good for America and it's not good for New York.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're going to take phone calls before we finish, as we always do. 1-800-848-WABC if you want to get in line. We continue, John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and you all together right here at 77 WABC. Taxi strike next week?
I hope not. There's one organization that says they're going to strike. I hope cooler heads prevail. It's not in their interest, not in the city's interest. And I think here's the issue. We made an agreement with the taxi industry that they would get a fare increase. In fact, have had two fare increases. And to justify that to the public, the public would have better service. And that's what this technology does. It lets you pay by credit card, which incidentally, every study shows people give much bigger tips. So the cab drivers are going to make a lot more money.
This has more to do with tracking of the cabs or potential
tracking
of the cabs.
Well, I don't want to say that. There is the somebody allege, let me phrase it that way, that a driver now who fills out sheet of where you picked up the passenger, where you took them, and how much you got, that some of them might have occasionally missed writing down something and therefore had lowered taxes or whatever. I'm sure that's not the case. But if it were the case, this would prevent that. The bottom line is this will, if you lose property, we'll be able to find it quickly, find out which cab was where, track it down for you. You'll be able to know what route you're taking. You'll be able to get information. You'll be able to pay by the credit card. It's in everybody's interest. And the credit and the cab industry is going to make more money out of this because it's easy to use cabs. But also, as I say, people tend to give bigger tips when they're not, they don't have to reach, you know, it, you round it out in your pocket with the cash. With the credit card, you tend to round out the tip,
right.
And you tend to round it out. It looks too cheap to do, you know, 75
cents.
So, you
give them a buck.
Or $2 or something. Yeah, it's just so easy. You write it down. Doesn't feel so. Cab industry, and virtually all the cab industry is in favor of this. They will not strike. It's only one small group. We have contingency plans to put into effect. But I don't think they're going to strike. And if they do, I don't think it'll be effective. It's, a week when there's not a lot of traffic. It's Labor Day week. And while people are back from vacation, it's still a four-day week. And I think that cooler heads will prevail.
School's all set. They start when? Next week, I guess, right?
Schools start next week. And I will do a symbolic visit of a school on Monday as they're opening cartons of books and that sort of thing. We've invited the head of the UFT, Randy Weingarten, and the head of the CSA, the Principals Union, Ernie Logan, to come with us. And we're going to go and just say thank you to people who are working that day, getting it ready. I'm looking forward to a great year in school. The teachers have been doing a spectacular job. Principals have been providing the direction, custodians, school safety offices. Our objective next year is to continue to raise the graduation rate, continue to raise the test scores in math and English, and continue to recruit the great faculty and administrators to do it efficiently and to keep crime going down. And I think we can do all of those things at the moment. You know, everybody comes off a year where all the numbers were good. It's a great thing to be part of a system that's working, and that's what you hear when you talk to teachers around the city.
SAT scores in the city, actually across the country, have been down.
Yeah, but here in New York, funny thing is, it's good news because all of a sudden we're getting enormous number of kids who never took them before and who you would think would not score well to take the SATs. That was part of our thing. We want them to apply. We had 1.5 million students took the test this year in New York City, and 24% did not identify English exclusively as their first language. And the College Board said that 35% of the test takers will be the first in their families to go to college. And in New York City, there were 38,937 kids from the class of 07 that took the exam last year, an increase of 8.7%. over 06, and the number of black students taking the test was up 15.4%. The number of Mexicans was up 22%. Puerto Ricans up 11.9%. The number of kids who identified themselves as other Hispanics were up 22.7%. What we've done is we've said to all these kids, you have the potential to go on. Don't think about quitting. You can get into a college. You got to work hard. Nobody says it's going to be easy. It isn't going to be easy to do the work. It isn't going to be easy to pay for it. This America's all about struggle. You know, it's all about coming here and seizing that, looking for that star and working your ways towards it. And so we've gotten, for free, we pay it for kids to take, all the kids to take the PSATs, and that opens their eyes. Say, hey, maybe I could do this. It you'd like to see the scores go up, but the reason ours are down is for a good reason.
Let me ask you, there was a big story about you, and you were out at, where were you? I think you were at JFK, and, be nice. The customs agents should be nice. Did you get complaints? Did the city get complaints from tourists?
Oh, all of the – this is – look, I thought long and hard about, do you want to go take a shot at the State Department and Homeland Security? But every study done by independent groups shows the same thing. People around the world can't come to America to spend their dollars or to go to our schools or to bring their companies and business. And if in Brazil, I think it is, you have to wait 100 days to get an appointment to apply for a visa.
I mean, to come to the United States.
To come to the United States. It isn't a question whether you're qualified or not, whether you can get through the security issues. The bureaucracy, and I've complained about it. I've talked to Secretary Rice. Last time I was a visitor in office, maybe 6 months ago, I've talked to Michael Chertoff, who's I've gotten to know pretty well. And, you know, both are trying to do the right thing, I think. But the bottom line is, and you can't hide it, the bureaucracy at the consular level is hopelessly behind. If you need to get a passport to get out of this country, if you need a visa to get into this country.
Is that just because it's broken and it's slowed down, or has there been directives to do what?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't run those agencies, and I'm sure running them isn't easy. But this has gone on for a long, long time, and other countries don't get the same thing. I just tell you, in my company, you know, when I go, customs and immigration tends to be a little bit easier, in all fairness. I'm not a good example. But people in my company say when they come to America, and we have, you know, offices in 160 cities around the world, they get treated like criminals. That's what I hear again and again and again. I don't make this up. This is what they say. Now, we depend on tourism. We depend on people bringing their dollars here and their business and their knowledge. And,
I think we need to go to a program where if you travel a lot or you are going to travel, you pre-register or you have, you know.
Yeah, but you got to be able to do it. You know, you have to.
Understand it within a reasonable
amount
of time.
Right. I mean, look, John, we have billions of transactions with credit cards every day, with virtually the tiniest percentage of error or corruption. I mean, you know, this is not rocket scientist stuff to do this. If you take a look, you know, you're talking in, you know, tens of millions of people, not billions of people. Tens of millions of people a year, not billions of transactions a day.
Exactly.
And there's no reason with today's technology. We stop tracking when people leave this country. You can't make this up. Yeah. We make a big deal about checking when they come in, and then we don't know whether they're still here or not.
You and I don't have time, at least at this sitting, to get into this one, because you're absolutely right. It is idiotic.
You know, I didn't mean to say anything against the two departments, but this is clearly up to state and up to Homeland Security. We want security, but we have to have a life, too, and we have to have an economy, too, and we have to let people come and go. There's appropriate levels of control and balance, but come on. Can't isolate. We can't pull up a wall around ourselves. We don't have a future. The terrorists are winning if we do that.
Michael Bloomberg will stay with us. Your questions are coming up next. 1-800-848-WABC. Right back. It is your turn to talk to Michael Bloomberg. You ask the questions. We're going to start with Diane in Bay Ridge. Hello, Diane. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to know if the Muslim Day Parade is still going to take place two
Sure, it's going to take place. It's
September
on September 11th. 9th on Madison Avenue, I think. It starts at 41st Street going to 27th, or maybe it's the reverse. Are you going to attend?
Why?
But a lot of people like parades, and, you know, different ethnic groups celebrate with parades in the city. It's a tradition. The kids like it, and, you know, it's a good chance for every ethnicity to just take a little bit of pride.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Diane. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's try Glenn out in Sayville. Hello, Glenn.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions for you about the congestion pricing.
Yep. Real fast, Glenn.
Okay, I commute on a daily basis, and I'm wondering how you expect the current mass transit system to absorb the additional commuters that will be displaced.
Well,
from
it
the
would
road.
Be a nice problem to have if we get there. I mean, hopefully we get the congestion pricing put in, and hopefully the fee that we charge is enough to get people to take their cars off the roads and go to mass transit. But one of the things we've said is before we implement it, we would expand the mass transit capacity. Now, obviously, we can't expand the number of subways quickly, although we are building the extension of number 7 line on the west side. We're doing east side access that's being tunneled right now. So we are getting there with those. But express buses and express bus lanes, there was a nice article in the Staten Island Advance, I think yesterday, about how buses will get through because the bus drivers will have a button they push and the red lights turn to green for the bus.
Can I get one of those?
No, you cannot. But we think that will give us more capacity. But it'd be a nice problem to have.
It will be, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. As you say, there is a lag time on huge infrastructure. You just don't go to your local car manufacturer.
No, but the buses you can.
Yeah,
the buses we do think, and putting in signaling and putting in dedicated lanes across the bridges. And if you're sitting in traffic and the buses go zipping by, not everybody will switch, but some people will say, wait a second, it's got to be a better way. I mean, look, I take the subway downtown, even though it's all fairness. Times writes the story. I drive the subway. Yeah, we drive to different places. Sometimes the same place, and you take the subway. It's a lot quicker than driving.
Much quicker.
Everybody'd love to sit in the car drinking a cup of coffee while somebody else drove.
Exactly. All right, Glenn, thank you, my friend. 1-800-848-WABC. Eddie in Queens. What's your question,
Mr.
Eddie?
Mr. Mayor, I have a question for you. We have a rogue Mr. Softy Man out here in Flushing.
I can hear him right now.
You got it. Okay, that's not me. That's ABC playing that. But this guy knows what the laws are, okay? He parks in a fire hydrant on a daily basis, leaving his truck running, spewing the odors and the noise into our homes.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Eddie.
Hour at a time.
Number one, stay on. Somebody will pick it up and give us the information where, and I'll find out who's responsible to track it down. But I will tell you a story. I played on Monday in the Corrections Officers Benevolent Association golf tournament at Inwood Country Club out in Queens. And while I played the same hole 20 times, and there was in the distance, I don't know where, we couldn't see him, a Mr. Softy truck, and he kept playing the thing, and it drove us crazy.
You mean the mayor couldn't have picked up 3-1-1?
I was there trying to hit a ball. But Eddie, stay on, and somebody will pick you up.
I will put Eddie
on. You
want
to go and see if we can fit in one more here? Yeah. Dennis?
All right. Dennis, good morning. You're with the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I'm a native New Yorker. I grew up in New York. My father lived next door to Al Smith. That's how far west we go. Every single time they use the excuse that they want to reduce traffic in New York by raising prices, raising tolls, whether it be the Verrazano, the Battery Tunnel, it's never worked. It's been done, and it's never worked. I remember when the Verrazano Bridge was 50 cents. I remember when the Battery Tunnel was a quarter. It doesn't work.
Well, Dennis, you don't know whether it didn't work or because it might have been a heck of a lot worse if they hadn't done that. It is true that traffic has continued to grow. Although in the last few years, it has leveled off to some extent. But congestion in the city is choking the economy, and congestion in the city is creating pollution in the air that's damaging our lungs and our kids' lungs. And people from New Jersey, for example, wouldn't really pay anything because they'd be able to offset the tolls they pay to drive into the city, and all you can't get out of New Jersey without paying a toll. So for them, they would be big beneficiaries because less traffic. And they don't even pay for it. It's others who'd have to pay. But there's no one answer to reducing congestion. It is making it harder or more expensive to drive, and at the same time providing a more cost-effective, rapid, pleasurable alternative in mass transit.
What is the status of the congestion plan with the federal government?
The federal government's awarded us $354 million contingent on the state legislature approving a plan essentially what we had proposed, or one that does the same thing that they're convinced will do the same thing.
And you're supposed to get an answer on
that. And
we
have to do it by March 31st, I think it is, of this coming year of 08. And it has to be implemented by 09. I think it's March or January 09, whichever. And if not that, we will lose $354 million and continue to stifle our growth and pollute our air. It's up to, first thing, there's a panel that we agreed to. I have three representatives. City Council Speaker has three. Governor has three. The Senate majority has three. Minority has one. House or Assembly majority has three. Minority one.
A lot of people on a committee.
17, headed by a guy named Mark Shaw, who was my first deputy mayor. He's a very smart guy. And they're going to study it, make a recommendation to the Assembly, and then they've got to vote. And they're going to have to vote and stand up. They want to vote to have a future, or they don't.
Mr. Mayor, as always, a pleasure. Enjoy the nice weather this long weekend as
you
best
too.
You can. And we'll talk to you next Friday.
Don't drink and drive.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg.